By this time, a thriving smuggling route existed between the city and Egypt, and other caravans came in regularly from the port of Safaga on the eastern sea. Since the capture of the treasure of Trok and Narja, Galala had become a city rich with gold. Like hyenas, the merchants sniffed the aroma of the yellow metal from afar and brought in their wares from the ends of the world. Nowadays, there was no luxury or necessity that could not be obtained in the city's souks, so Mintaka was able to procure a wagon load of the finest red wine from the vineyards of the Temple of Osiris at Busiris for the welcome banquet she'd arranged for the evening that the charioteers returned. At her orders, the butchers spitted and roasted 10 whole oxen and chickens and geese by the hundred. Fast relays of the new chariots brought up fresh fish and baskets of lobsters in seaweed from the coast. Most of the long-whiskered crustaceans were still alive when they were dropped squeaking into the boiling pots. Hunters scoured the surrounding desert and came in with gazelle, oryx, and the flesh and eggs of the ostrich. The banquet was a joyous celebration of their achievements and small victories over the false pharaohs. The wine had flowed to great effect when Nefer rose to welcome the guests and announce the recovery of the 5 squadrons of chariots from under the sand. "With the horses that we've freed from the tyranny of Trok," there were hoots and guffaws at this, "and the weapons and chariots we now have, we are well able to defend ourselves against Trok and Narja. As you're aware, every day that passes sees fresh recruits to the Blue Banner. Soon, it'll not be merely a case of defending ourselves, but of taking back what was stolen from us and avenging the terrible deeds that those 2 monsters have perpetrated. They have the blood of true and noble kings upon their hands. They are the murderers of King Apepe, who was the father of the noble lady at my side, and they slew my own father, Pharaoh Tomoza." The guests were silent and puzzled now, looking at each other for guidance. Then Hilto rose to his feet, Nefer had primed him, and placed the question on his lips. "Divine Majesty, forgive my ignorance, for I'm just a simple man, but I do not understand. All the world knows that King Apepe died in an accident when his barge caught fire while anchored at Balasfura. Now you lay the guilt for his death on the pretenders. How can that be?" "There is one among us who was a witness to the true events of that tragic night." Nefer reached down and drew Mintaka to her feet. The company cheered her, for they'd all come to love her for her beauty and her gracious spirit. When Nefer held up his hand, they fell silent and listened to her with all their attention as she related the story of the murder of her father and brothers. She used simple words and spoke to them as friends and comrades, yet she was able to share with them her own horror and grief. When she'd finished, they were growling like a cage of hungry lions at feeding time. Now Shabaka rose and asked his prepared question. "But, Divine Pharaoh, you also spoke of the death of your own father, King Tomoza, of blessed memory. How was he murdered, and by whom?" "For the answer to that question, I must call upon the Magus, Lord Taita, from whom no secret, however devious and grisly, can be hidden." Taita faced them and spoke in a whisper that riveted their attention. His every word carried to the ears of even those on the outskirts of the gathering, and the softness of those words contrasted so effectively with the gruesome circumstances they described that men shuddered and women wept. At the end, Taita held up the broken arrow with its crimson, green, and yellow feathers. "This is the instrument of Pharaoh Tomoza's death, the arrow that bears the signet of Trok, but which was loosed by Narja, the man whom Pharaoh loved and trusted as a brother." They howled their outrage and their craving for justice to the starlit skies above Galala. Taita hurled the arrow onto the nearest fire over which one of the oxen was roasting. It would not have borne closer inspection, for it was not the arrow that had killed Pharaoh, but one of those he'd taken from the buried chariot. He sat down and closed his eyes as if composing himself to sleep. Nefer let the guests give full vent to their feelings, and when they began to quieten a little, he signalled for more wine flagons to be carried around. There was one last proclamation he had to make, and he waited until the mood had mellowed further before he stood up again. All fell silent and watched him in anticipation, heightened by the good wine from Busiris. The night had already held so many marvels, and they wondered at what yet was to come. "Before a king leads his armies against the enemies of this sacred land of our forefathers, he should be a king indeed, a true and veritable king. I propose to lead you against the usurpers, but I am not yet ordained as Pharaoh. I can achieve this confirmation if I wait until the year of my majority, but that's still far off, and I do not choose to wait that long, nor will my enemies allow me the grace." He paused, and they watched him fascinated, so young yet so tall and straight as his father had been before him. Now he raised his right hand in the gesture of oath-taking. "In the sight of my people and my gods, I will run the red road to prove that I am your king." Some sighed and shook their heads. Others started to their feet and cried out, "No, Pharaoh, we will not see you killed," while others called, "Bacher! If he fails, then he fails as a brave man." That night Mintaka wept as she asked him, "Why did you not tell me first?"
"Because you would have tried to stop me."
"But why must you do it?"
"Because my gods and my duty require it."
"Even if it kills you?"
"Even if it kills me."
She stared long into his green eyes and saw how steadfast was his resolve. And she kissed him and said, "I am proud that I am to be wife to such a man as you.